Isle of Dogs. And this is the second stop-motion animated feature from Wes Anderson, the first being the fantastic Mr. Fox. Mm-hmm. I keep forgetting if it's the incredible Mr. Fox, the hilarious Mr. Fox, I don't know, but the fantastic Mr. Fox, which I love. Now, I'm going to correct Mark, and Mark's going to say he loved that movie, but I'm only putting you out there right now this way because I want to put a little suspense in here, because Martin did not like Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yeah, no, I will not come back and say I love that movie. I didn't. Okay. I remember seeing it, I was like, I kind of thought I'd like this more.
Okay, well, now we have this film right here. And that kind of makes everybody wonder, well, you know, does Martin like anything Wes Anderson does? Damn.
I mean, you know, it was one of those things where I always thought I was a Wes Anderson fan. And then after some of the movies, like, well, yeah, Fantastic Mr. Fox, I was okay about.
Moonlight Kingdom, I know you didn't like.
Yeah, well, it was what was the one, Steve Zissou?
Life Aquatic.
Life Aquatic.
That which was I have learned to like.
Really?
A lot more. Yeah, I watched it on TV one day, and I just got caught up in it, man.
I guess that can happen. And maybe if I come back to it, I just remember that being hyped up for it and liking the stuff in it. But when it was all said and done, I was like, man, that did not connect
with me
at all.
Give it another chance, man. I actually got really wrapped up in it later, but. But then
Moonrise Kingdom, that was the one where I went, I am not a Wes Anderson fan. Fuck that. I like some of his early movies. I hit the guy's two up his own ass.
Yeah. I don't care about none of these. Martin took that fedora off. I am not a black hipster.
Yeah, I know.
This is Martin. This is Martin right here. No.
It was that proof. They're like, oh, you know what? Yeah, it turns out I'm not a black hipster.
Yeah, you know, you are not. If you can't get past Wes Anderson, no, brother. That's the ultimate test. That's the last boss in the video game, Wes Anderson.
But he did win me back. With Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah. And so, you know, with this one, let's see. Maybe there's a little bit of that Grand Budapest up here in this movie. And what we have is a movie with a very, very, very high Japanese motif in it. So high, in fact, that the one of the lead characters is named Atari.
Yeah.
First, I was like, no, you didn't.
You know, man? And that's the thing. Sometimes with those names, you're like, oh, come on. And then you find out, oh, it's actually a very common name, like David or Paul.
Yeah, because I had an Atari 2600. I didn't even know that was.
Like, if you meet a Japanese guy, you're like, Akira, the movie. It's like, yeah, most people in my family name Akira. What's the deal?
Yeah. You know, that's I thought that was like Tyrone or something for Asians. But anyway, with this, you have young Atari, who is the orphaned ward, our nephew, of the mayor of Japan here, this town, or at least this town of Japan, 20 years in the future. And at this point, we have sort of have this dystopian future where at least it is for dogs.
Right.
Because dogs get this illness. They get the dog flu. They get sniffing and sneezing and snot coming out their nose. And they're like, nah, you ain't going to.
Japan says, fuck dogs. They got to go.
Yeah. Shit, we like cats anyway. Japan is like, yeah, we can't even eat these motherfuckers. Put them on. Send them to an island somewhere. And that's what they do. They send them to the Isle of Dogs. Where
Garbage Island.
Which is just Garbage Island. They just renamed that shit. Yeah. They just scratched out garbage and put Dog Island. Make it sound like Godzilla's there. It's next to Monster Island. And on this island here, these dogs, of course, are sick, starving, diseased, and trying to survive the best way they can. And on that island is one dog named Sport. And that is the dog of young Atari. Young Atari learns that he's not with this program here anyway, this whole legislation of getting these dogs on this island. And he's like, oh, I'd be damned if it happens to my dog. So he gets in a small rocket ship, makes his way over to the Isle of Dogs, and tries to get his dog back and possibly sparking a revolution along with maybe a foreign exchange student. Let's go ahead and take a look at the trailer for Isle of Dogs, and then we'll be back with our review.
The Japanese archipelago, 20 years in the future. Canine saturation has reached epidemic proportions. An outbreak of dog flu rips through the city of Megasaki. Mayor Kobayashi issues emergency orders, calling for a hasty quarantine. Trash Island becomes an exile colony. The Isle of Dogs.
I don't think I can stomach any more of this garbage.
Exactly.
Same here.
Words out of my mouth.
Nobody's giving up around here, and don't you forget it, ever. You're Rex.
You're King. You're Duke. You're Boss.
I'm Chief. We're a pack of scary, indestructible alpha dogs.
Atari Kobayashi, you heroically hijacked a junior turboprop XJ-750 and flew it to the island because of your dog.
Darn it.
I've got a crush on you.
We get the idea. You're looking for your lost dog Spots. Does anybody know him?
No.
I've lost all of my pride.
Spots, if he's alive, may very well be living even at this moment as a captive prisoner.
Somebody is up to something.
Will you help him? The little pilot.
Why should I?
Because he's a 12-year-old boy. Dogs love those.
We'll find him. Wherever he is, if he's alive, we'll find your dog.
Ah! It's gonna be a fight!
Or somebody spoke his language.
Wow!
To the north, a long rickety causeway over a noxious sludge marsh leading to a radioactive landfill polluted by toxic chemical garbage. That's our destination.
Great. Got it.
Get ready to jump.
So as you can see, a lot of names in there. In fact, they're the names right there. It's an all-star cast that you have here. Some favorites that Wes Anderson likes to work with, like Bill Murray, Jeff Goldblum, Ed Norton. Then you have some new people in here that he's worked with, like Bryan Cranston. And he has some side characters, like Lee Schreiber. Mm-hmm. Courtney B. Vance is the narrator in here. Lee Schreiber plays Sport the dog. Yoko Ono does a voice in here. And then recently, a recent Academy Award winner, you have Frances McDormand.
Yeah.
And then, well, I was talking about exchange student in there, you have Greta Gerwig as Tracy, the American exchange student from like Ohio or something, who's trying to lead up this revolution too.
She's got a blonde afro and
that girl is fine, man. I like that. Here's the other thing that's a star of the movie, the visuals. And this is something that you've seen a lot with Wes Anderson. It's funny to go in and look at some of the things that Wes Anderson is known for doing in his movies. If you look at some of the things that he does here, he does like those quick whip pans. He does those dolly shots. He loves those dolly shots. He does a lot of those overhead shots where somebody's planning something or writing something, mm-hmm. and the camera's looking down on a table. But what he's done here is also brought in a lot of influences. And the biggest influences that he has here is from not just Japanese culture, but Japanese movies. Like I'm looking at some of the things. Now, I'm not going to try to be like this pretentious film student and tell you every Japanese influence that he has. But anybody who loves movies and has seen, an array of films that are considered to be classic from other countries, such as The Seven Samurai, mm-hmm. Akira Kurosawa. Apparently, he's a big fan of Akira Kurosawa, and it had a big influence on this movie. You can even see almost a little bit of something like The Seven Samurai here, which starts with this standoff. I want to go back to that first dog. That first dog, I'm like, damn, what shit is he on? I'm like, I ain't fighting him because he's on that PCP. He ain't gonna feel a thing.
He's on that shit.
I don't even know if he knows people are in front of him right now. See, he looking at us. Yeah, say something. I'll whoop your ass too. But that's just one shot right there. You know, Seven Samurai sort of had a Western feel to it, and we saw that right there at that standoff. What I did was I just went online and just randomly looked up. I put in images of Kurosawa, Seven Samurai, and I put in images from Isle of Dogs. Uh-huh. And I was surprised at how I found so many shots that you could tell were just, well, I don't know if they were conscious or not, but they were just influenced.
They definitely had the feel.
Yeah, you see the composition is
yeah.
and all these, and it's like, this is way too too coincidental to be, you know, to not have had direct influence. I mean, taking shots from that movie. I'm sure people can tell me some other films that are influences here from Kurosawa or other Japanese directors, but I noticed that immediately.
It's really nice and refreshing to see somebody being influenced by Japanese media that's not anime.
I know, robots or something like that, or martial arts,
yeah,
ninjas.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, this... I mean, everybody's talking about, and I know they're probably going to try to apply it here, like, oh, this is a white guy who's doing Japanese-influenced art and visuals in this movie, and you're probably going to start throwing down appropriation here. But if you see the movie, it's really respectful of that.
It's very respectful. That's one of the big pluses of this movie, is that it's respectful of those old Japanese movies, something that you don't see a lot of. And it'd be different if he came in going like, yeah, man, I really dig this shit. I want to throw this in there. But it's like... No, this is somebody who really did their homework.
He's not geeking out
right
with this.
He's not fetishizing it.
No, no.
So not like Quentin Tarantino. He's he has respect for the source.
No, that Quentin Tarantino, look, and I'm not saying this is good or bad. You know, if you can be a fanboy and make something good, that's fine. But, you know, Kill Bill, that's a fanboy film.
Yep.
This is a guy who says, wow, you know, I really enjoy the culture here, and I'm telling a story that pertains to, you know, mm-hmm. Japanese culture. And he did it, right down to even the music. If you've watched early Japanese films from the 40s and 50s, mm-hmm. You can hear some of the musical influence. Not only like the drums, like the Japanese drums, but even like just the music outside of that.
Yeah, just music in the score. I mean, it's funny that the story takes place in the future because it has such a feel like it's in the past.
Yeah, yeah. As Martin said, you know, that's a great word, right? They're not fetishizing this at all, man. And what's funny about this is that it is a typical Wes Anderson movie. Like, no matter what kind of crazy shit is happening, all these characters are just going to be very matter-of-fact about it.
Yeah.
They'll
be glib at times.
Yeah. Yeah, they are very deadpan about everything that's happening here. Like, there's this one scene where these dogs are getting ready to tear the shit out of each other. And, of course, they stop because, you know, they got a reason and they got to be cool. Yeah. And they got to talk about it. It's almost like if I was at a bar, I told you, Marty, like, excuse me, I don't like the way you looked at my girl. You know, I want to go outside and challenge you to a fight, at which point you would probably beat my ass anyway.
Yes, and I do understand that. If you don't mind, I'd like to finish my beer and pay off the barkeep because he has nothing to do with this. And then we will settle our business like gentlemen.
It's very good. Then I'll wait. I'll be right here.
Afterwards, we tear each other apart.
We tear them. We beat the shit out of each other.
Wait a second. Before we attack each other and tear ourselves to shreds like a pack of maniacs, let's just open the sack first and see what's actually in it. It might not even be worth the trouble.
What do you see?
I'm not sure.
Maybe.
Hi.
Oh, yeah, it's on.
Rancid apple core, two worm-eaten banana peels, a moldy rice cake, a dried-up pickle, tin of sardine, bones, a pile of broken eggshells, an old smushed-up rotten gizzard with maggots all over it.
Okay, it's worth it.
Get your ass over here! And the crazy thing about it, all that seriousness, and then we turn it to a cartoon comic strip dust cloud with them hands. Like I even think I saw a human hand come out of there, and there's dogs fighting. You know, like I used to see that. I mean, y'all know that, and I got it real tiny right here, but that is a staple, almost a cliche of comic strips. Like I used to read like Beetle Bailey and his drill saw. I used to beat the shit out of him. It would turn that dust cloud. And that's the funny thing about it. This is a weird mix of so many different things. This is a mix of slapstick comic strip comedy, like you saw right there, where at the same time, this is also this is influenced by Japanese culture. This is also a sci-fi dystopian film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And somehow he makes that work in addition to making this about these characters living in a death camp. And still saying, but hey, it's a family film.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know how much of a family film it is. I mean, I suppose it is because of the rating, but the stakes are dire here. Oh. I mean, it really is. I mean, and there's moments, there's several moments where characters cry, and you feel like and just looking at what's going on, you know, they're looking at some extermination here, and there's some political intrigue going on, and I really dug this movie. I was like, man, I am so into this.
Well, that's the thing, Martin. Like, you look at these animals, and it manages to convey its message strictly through visuals. Wes Anderson is a guy whose characters take a backstory usually to his visuals in the best way, though. Like, he wants to propel things along with the visuals because he doesn't want to, and I respect this, and this is my take on it, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like he doesn't want to pull cheap emotions from people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why his characters are kind of, they have this deadpan and very matter-of-fact serious tone about themselves, because these characters visually speak for themselves. You see this immediately, and that's suffering.
Yeah.
They are skinny.
Yeah.
They are starving.
Yeah, and there's this disease going around, and they're wondering who's going to get it.
Yeah, and they're sniffing the whole time. I mean, they got mange really bad. There's patches of fur missing on them. Even the stop motion, I don't think they meant this, but the stop motion even it lends itself to just looking nasty. Like, when these characters, you know, stop motion, when a character's standing still, there's still some things that kind of move, mm-hmm. and they have to adjust things.
Yeah.
And, like, when these dogs are moving, like, the fur still moves. It looks like there's parasites moving under their skin, or something's about to, like, mm-hmm. crawl out from their fur. And I love that. It looks it just looks nasty, man. And they get that across, and you just kind of feel for these characters just seeing them visually.
Yeah, you do.
And they don't. Then you know. And again, they're very matter of fact about dying too, because mm-hmm. the way they look. I mean, they said, "Look, y'all looking at us, and you know we probably gonna die." And they even say, "Yeah,
it's like they accept their fate."
Yeah, one dog tells another. He's like, "Hey man, don't worry about me. I'm probably gonna starve to death anyway, and then somebody's gonna eat my dead carcass. Have a good day."
So what's the rating in this movie? If it's that dark,
it's PG, I think.
PG.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what? And
like you popping your eyes out, but a movie shouldn't be R unless there's sex or extreme violence.
That's a good point.
And that's not here. That's the thing. I think about how sanitized cartoons and children's movies have become, because mm-hmm. this reminds me of movies I saw when I was young where they didn't worry about that. And you'd see some cartoon you saw, but it'd be kind of dark. Like later you'd be like, you know, you might have nightmares about it.
Yeah.
Or just have a certain feeling.
Like Jaws? Jaws is PG.
Well, Paul Jaws PG
but that's definitely an adult's movie.
But
there's some movies you saw that were for kids, but at the same time, you're kind of like, ooh, that gave me kind of a feeling.
And
they don't do that anymore because parents are so on top of it. Oh, that's creepy. You can't do that. Oh, how do kids think about it?
Yeah.
And I go like, you know what? Man, we grew up with those movies, and sure, they gave us those feelings, but they also made us more creative in a way.
Yes.
They didn't damage us permanently. There was just that thing of like, ooh, that gave me chills.
Yep.
And this is such a throwback to that.
And that's the thing. It's not that this is really all that dark. It's just that it's a movie that's just not talking down to kids.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Like, and it really is the definition of a family film. It's like, yes, there are things for adults here that might not be for children, but at the same time, kids are not going to be that scared of this. And, man, you know, what kid cannot relate to a boy and his dog? And
right.
You know, and that's what we have here with this. You know, and I love the visual. When I say that Wes Anderson is a visual storyteller, it's because he's not doing things just to be cool. We just got through talking about this movie, Gnomeo or Sherlock Gnomes. The first one, don't put that shit on me. But no, this is something where, I tell you, Wes Anderson, he likes to use a lot of visuals to tell a story. And he does so because, the reason why he succeeds at making that a priority above his characters is because it is such an element of mm-hmm. storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the movie, it's not just the stop motion that's in play here. I love the way he creatively brings in other forms of animation, such as when characters are on a TV screen.
Oh, yeah.
Like when they have to do a newsreel or they have to do a report or an interview. These characters come up and they have this this Japanese illustration style to them, and it looks great because they're not just using it for flashbacks
mm-hmm.
or you know some other cheap form of narration.
Canine saturation has reached epidemic proportions. An outbreak of snout fever rips through the city of Megasaki. Blizzards of infected fleas, worms, ticks, and lice menace the citizenship. Dog flu threatens to cross the species threshold and enter the human disease.
Did I mention it turns into a zombie movie?
Yeah, I love it. You see everybody just looking at the dog. You're like, what? It's all y'all in one dog? And once he turns around, you're like, oh, I get it.
Nobody asked, how did this dog pay his way onto the subway?
Will you even ask if it's there?
Yeah.
I won't even bother. It's like, oh, it's there.
I got my ticket like everybody else, motherfucker. You know, I like the way ain't nobody looking at that dog. You know, it's I love the 2D art that they do here. And again, Martin, it's not like, because they could have done something like Swish Pan Manga or something like that.
Sure.
They don't do that here.
Yeah, they don't.
It's like the best thing I can compare it to, and I don't mean to be insulting, by saying this, but imagine the artwork that you see with Japanese calendars. Now imagine the artwork done with modern settings and whatnot. That's what you have here. So yeah, it's great in that aspect right there, but it's still, you know, it's still not light on character just because he put his visuals ahead of everything to make the movie tell a story. The characters are great here. You know, that whole thing about these characters talking in a deadpan way. It's just, sometimes it's hilarious the conversations that they have. Right. Not even trying to be. It's like these dogs don't realize how crazy this world is, comically and tragically. Uh-huh. And they just sit back and they just have these conversations like they at Starbucks or something.
You heard the rumor, right, about Doggy Chop?
Remind us again. Brand. What rumor?
Oh, they folded. Mm. Oh, no. Mm.
Doggy Chop folded?
How about you, Chief? What was your favorite food?
Me? Oh, I don't care. Garbage, trash, scraps of rubbish. I'm used to leftovers. Of course, I wasn't always astray.
Wait, what'd you say?
I said, of course, I wasn't always.
You got a problem with it?
Did I stutter?
That's Bryan Cranston, who I was watching this whole movie. I thought it was George Clooney.
I didn't think George Clooney, but I didn't know Bryan Cranston.
No, it sounds like him.
That's Bryan Cranston.
Yeah, once
you know, yeah. That's Bryan Cranston as Chief. Chief who's always telling him, look, I ain't no pussy ass, you know, house dog like y'all were. I actually put time on these streets. I whoop all y'all's asses right now. I love Chief, man. And I didn't know it was Bryan Cranston. So it caught me off guard when
I
saw
it is
name.
One of these things where the celebrity and the voice doesn't take over. The characters are the characters.
Yeah, very true. Very true, man. We don't want to make this movie sound as tragic as we're trying to put it. It's
still
not,
fun. Yeah. Mostly. And I mean those tragic moments, there's heart pulling moments. It's mostly fun, it's mostly funny. Visually, it's amazing that somebody put this much work into stop motion where they don't just settle on, okay, we have our style and we're going to go through. It plays around. It does different things. It's just quite an adventure to go on.
And there's just these small jokes in there that don't take over or they don't draw attention to. They say that they people prefer cats over dogs now. And it's funny because they have these scenes where cats just scowling. You know, like, yeah, fuck them dogs. So they make Grumpy Cat look ecstatic. I love it. They never meow. Mm-hmm. They never hiss. They just scowl, just sitting in people's laps. That, you know, every time I saw that was funny. There's a lot of things that Martin said that I can't really add to too much because he's right. You know, that was a great point saying that, you know, it's good to see something that just is not afraid to put it out there for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take your little punk ass kids to go see Sherlock Gnome if you're that, worried about it.
I want to see this.
Which they would be more. You should see this,
yeah,
man.
You definitely should see it.
I mean, if I had some complaints about this, there's a couple. First of all, let me just say that this, besides the visuals and everything, the script here is amazing that they were able to handle so much. I know a lot of people are complaining about this thing with the Japanese boy here, Atari. They're saying that him and a bunch of the other Japanese characters, they don't have subtitles. And I think that they're taking that as an insult, like, well, because we have Greta Gerwig as an American, she's pandering to them to American audiences, speaking English to us when they're blowing off the Japanese characters. Same way with the dogs. Since we have to spend a lot of time with the dogs, they're speaking English, but how come the people can't? Just treating them like a side thing, and I don't think that's the case.
Fucking for real, man.
I'm telling you, man. Not everybody, okay. But the thing is, I think it's cool that they didn't put subtitles. That was pandering to me, and it's the story about the dogs, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's the dog story. We spend more time with them. Their barks are translated into English, and that's why it's that way. Mm-hmm. And they even tell you at the beginning of the movie, this is what we're doing. This is why some people get subtitles and some don't. So shut the fuck up. but if I did have some complaints, you know, I was admiring this for being such an ambitious project, and not unlike a lot of Wes Anderson movies where he's, you know, if you want to talk about catering to an audience, like a lot of it caters down to his hipster crowd.
Yeah. He no pun intended, throws bones.
Yeah, man, shut your ass. As it was, even now, like, man, we're going to tear your ass up for that.
I applaud that pun.
Talking about I didn't mean to do that. Yeah, I keep telling y'all, don't y'all enable this shit. But this, you know, with these dogs here, man, I'm sorry, this movie here, is like you couldn't resist. He put that one hipster song in there.
I've lost all my pride.
You know that hipster bicycle ride music with Ryan and Bob the Head. I'm like, you had to put that in there. Not that it bothered me, but I was like, man, you'd have to put that in there though. The other is female characters. I have heard some complaints, and I do kind of agree with this, that, you know, we have some female characters in here who just is kind of pushed to the side. You know, they're there to either talk about breeding or to be bred with, or they're just there as like characters that are on for a minute. Like, for example, Scarlett Johansson as the character of Nutmeg.
I'm introducing myself. Who are you?
Damn, that's some exorcist shit right there.
I thought you knew all about me.
You know, that scene, and just maybe a couple seconds of others that you know that she has.
Okay, that's legit.
And you know, and plus is the way I like the way they I know that we're not the most PC people, and I'm not even complaining about this. I just like the way the movie just casually referred to the females as bitches. You know,
that's what they are.
That's what they are.
Scientifically, that's the name. Scientifically.
Yeah, I think it was Chief or some other dog said, yeah, go take this message to that bitch in that city over there. And even looked at the audience like, hey, man, look, we can say that. Y'all can't.
Right. That's our word.
It's all in context. Like anything, it's all in the context.
It's all in the context. I didn't have a problem with that. I just thought it was funny. That, if you want to talk about, again, not something that's not afraid to be what it is in front of children, it even did that.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, that's
the correct
cool.
word. That's the correct way of using the word. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Martin, I'll let you go ahead and start closing with this. I give it a full price, man. There's a it really is a movie that this is why we need more people like Wes Anderson. Whether you like his movies or not, chances are if you see his movies and you're saying, oh, this artistic son of a bitch right here, you know, this pretentious director, art director, it's like, nah, man, his visions are his. I use that word genius to say, like, not somebody who's that smart all the time, but somebody who just sees the world their way. And he's a creative genius that way, if you ask
me. And his vision is unified. You really feel like you're watching something that's not created by a committee whatsoever.
Yeah.
And this does make me look back at Fantastic Mr. Fox and go, you know what? I need to rewatch that and give it another shot.
It's a really good movie, man.
And you're even saying it about Steve Zissou, the Life Aquatic.
Enjoy that movie.
Maybe I'll watch it again. Moonrise Kingdom, I know, is not for me. But the thing is, with Moonrise Kingdom and some of the Wes Anderson movies I don't like, I realize watching this why that is. It's because there's so often it's like, well, instead of a joke, I'll just have something random happen, or people will be awkward, and that'll make people laugh. And I don't dig that, and this movie doesn't do that.
No.
And for all the things in the trailer that made me go like, I don't know, it could be too Wes Anderson-y, it's not. This was one of my most pleasant surprises from South by Southwest, and I was so happy I did the legwork I had to get into this movie, because it's one of those things where it's like, man, I don't think I've ever seen anything like this since I was 9 or 10 years old. Except it's for me now that I'm so much older than that. And I think everybody who has any kind of inkling to see it should give it a shot. It's a full price for sure.
I was going to ask, because you told me, like, it's one of those movies that I grew up with. Is there anything close to this? Anything that you can compare it off the top of your head? Anything close to it?
Question. Plague Dogs? You mean that movie Plague Dogs?
I don't know if I saw that.
It's a movie about two dogs that are... this movie reminded me of that a little bit, because there are scenes in this movie where there are dogs that are experimented on, and they still are like... They're still mutilated from that. Yeah, it's kind of rough, man. It's some nightmare shit going on with
there
this.
There is. And even the ending is bittersweet.
Yeah. And there's this... this movie Plague Dogs, where these two dogs escape from a lab and they're being hunted down by the scientists because they're thought to be carrying this disease that could like get people sick and maybe wipe out mankind. So I don't know. I never watched that movie again because I saw it as a kid. Hell no. I said never again till I watch this.
Now you got to rewatch it.
No, hell no. I practically did.
We'll find your dog.
It's gonna be a fight.
I wish somebody spoke his language.
Wow.
To the north, a long rickety causeway over a noxious sludge marsh leading to a radioactive landfill polluted by toxic chemical garbage. That's our destination.
Great.
Got it.
Get ready to jump.